45 and find out just how inexpensive and effective radio can be. That's 1-800-205-6245. KHNC 1360, The Lion. That's 1-800-205-6245.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Good morning. This is Joel Skousen, standing in for Dr. Stan Monteith here on the American Freedom Radio Network. I'm going to give you a preview of the World Affairs Brief coming out tomorrow. Our first topic is Secretary Paulson's plan solves nothing and will accelerate financial risk-taking. You know, there are a lot of complexities in what the U.S. Secretary of Treasury is proposing to fix in the so-called excesses and losses U.S. investment markets are experiencing. Well, simply put, the whole fix is a fraud. It will, in fact, ensure that there's less transparency and less oversight over the manner in which the Treasury and the Fed allow fellow insider investors and investment houses access to the fiat money cookie jar. In essence, Paulson is proposing a massive consolidation of regulatory power into one huge bureaucracy akin to what the Bush administration did with Homeland Security. This actually allows them to control things within that bureaucracy, control them for things not beneficial to what they're proposing, but in fact for the alternative agendas that exist within both Republican and Democratic administrations. As before in Homeland Security, this consolidation will be done not to benefit the homeland, that is the taxpayers, and it will not give us more security. The same thing will occur here with these proposals to so-called regulate or increase regulations among the... In fact, it does not increase regulations. It really increases their ability to hide things from the public. Sure, there will be a few changes that are needful, but they are mostly inserted just to help mask the wholesale restructuring of the tangled web of ineffective U.S. financial regulations so as to become more effective at only one thing, concealing insider dealing. That's what we must remember. So I'm going to give a couple of views on the Paulson proposal. Both of them are negative to help us see through the maze of the political jargon. And through it all, remember that these proposals came from the same duo, Paulson and Bernanke, that have had the unmitigated gall to tell Congress and the public with a straight face that the Bear Stearns rescue was no bailout. Well, as the Washington Post said this week, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, Jr. plans to ask Congress this year to set up a new agency to oversee mortgage lending and take action to enhance his department's role as the chief regulator of financial markets. The Treasury's initiatives seek to sweep away the current patchwork of regulation. Here I might insert that that kind of description always evokes positive nods, you know, sweep away the patchwork of regulation. But as we learned in Homeland Security, it's a dangerous illusion that consolidation means greater efficiency when government is involved. It does not. Continuing, the Post says, over the coming decade, in favor of three more powerful agencies to oversee banking, market stability, and consumer and investor protection. The plan's authors have argued that such changes are needed because government oversight has not kept up with the pace of financial innovation. And I might add here, this is not true. certain gaping holes were carved out in the regulations to make sure there was no regulation, and such as in derivatives, and that's where the problem arises. Polson acknowledged, said the Post, that the recommendations would not prevent further crises. Well, of course, nothing can prevent further crises when you have a continual outflow of fiat money. Fiat money is what creates these great ballooning crises in the financial markets. Polson said finally that these proposals would make government more nimble in addressing these crises. Well, that's what bothers me. Nimble isn't really the word. The ability of government to get more legal power from Congress to do what they're already doing now illegally is what this is all about. I want to point out something that I did say in last week's World Affairs Brief. There's not a single critic, there's not a single journalist, there wasn't a single shill of this administration that ever mentioned that all of this bailout of Bear Stearns and other financial markets was totally illegal without statutory authority. There is no authority for the Treasury to swap U.S. Treasury bonds for bad private mortgage assets. None whatsoever. Once again, this is Joel Skousen, editor of the World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stan. And we're talking about Secretary of Treasury Polson's new proposals for sweeping regulations to so-called solve the financial problems. This first commentary that I'm going to read from is from law professor Michael Mandel for Business Week. His article is entitled, Why the Polson Plan is Dead on Arrival. Now, I'm not sure he's correct about the title, but his analysis is sound. He says, let's see. In the middle of perhaps the greatest financial upheaval since the Great Depression, Treasury Secretary Polson is proposing to change a change in financial regulations, which basically amounts to a big wink and a nod to Wall Street. His plan will go nowhere, both for political and practical reasons. In fact, it does not even meet the minimum standard of improving transparency, which would reduce the possibility of a similar crisis in the future. Now, what Mandel is talking about the key issue of transparency, is that in free market philosophy, and I am a free market economist and political scientist, we believe that people can take whatever risk that they want, but there must be no fraud present, and everything must be out there on the table. So if they're going to take those risks, they do so with the potential of falling through the floor, but that there will be no bailout, and that they know what they were getting into. He continues, he says, the main point of the Polson plan is to make regulation more efficient. It notes that changes in the capital markets, pressuring the U.S. regulatory system, exposing regulatory gaps and redundancies, and compelling market participants to do business with other jurisdictions with more efficient regulation. Well, you know, I question this a little bit. More efficient at what? If you're greasing the skids for more riskier financial gambles, then that's really what the Polson thing is doing. So what makes this plan actually, or what's the purpose of it? The one clear improvement, says Mandel, is more regulatory oversight for mortgage lenders. Okay, we can go along with that. Otherwise, everything else is a plan consists of rearrangements and clarifications of current regulatory responsibilities. But under a single larger entity, which does not guarantee better regulation, in fact, just the opposite, as we have seen with Homeland Security. For example, responsibility for regulating insurance companies would gradually be shifted from the state to the federal level. That's a bad thing. Since companies need the power to evade one bad regulation in a state by switching to other states, this is the competition of regulation. This is Joel Skousen. World Affairs Brief will be back after the break.
Constitutional Moments are brought to you throughout the day through the generosity of CNC Prototype Machine, Boulder, Colorado.
Some churches believe that Christians will be raptured before the coming of the Great Tribulation. Have you heard this teaching? Have you wondered if it was true? The Watchman's Cry is an interesting book by Obadiah Frank that uses the Bible and clearly explains that this teaching is not true. You can get The Watchman's Cry from the American Freedom Network by calling 1-800-205-6245. This amazing book is only $10 postpaid. Get it now by calling 1-800-205-6245, the American Freedom Network.
If you enjoy alternative stations on the radio, shouldn't your TV service provide the same choices? You can get more channels than you have now, plus many more Christian and family programs in crystal clear 100% digital picture and sound, and the price is significantly lower than cable. Just call American Satellite at 970-443-7375. Already enjoying satellite TV but want a lower price? We can help you too. Packages start at only $19.99 a month. Call 970-443-7375. DVRs and high definition also available.
Columbine Hearing Center understands your hearing, speaking, and listening problems. Call highly qualified, nationally certified audiologist Michelle Gross for your hearing test, hearing aid, and listening rehabilitation needs. With 25 years of experience, you will get accurate diagnosis and treatment, undivided attention, and service. Call 303-857-6688 for a personal hands-on evaluation. Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688. Financing, Medicaid, and Medicare available.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
Good morning. This is Joel Skousen. I'm standing in for Dr. Stan Monteith here on the American Freedom Network. I'm the editor of the World Affairs Brief, and we're talking about Secretary Paulson's new proposal of regulatory changes on the government and why it is not intended to do what he's claiming it's doing. We're talking about Law Professor Mandel's commentary. He says the SEC should also consider streamlining the approval of any securities products common in the marketplace, as the agency did in 1998 rulemaking vis-a-vis certain derivative security products. Well, this is exactly the same kind of thing that created the current problems, the streamlining of these kinds of very risky, or the approval of these kinds of risky products. As I said before, I'm actually in favor of anyone making any financial gamble they want, as long as two conditions are present. That is, there's no access to public funds for a bailout, that everything is totally transparent, that there's no legal protection to shield the promoters from lawsuits by customers if the scheme goes bad. You know, and that's one of the problems with our present current system, is that people can put out these packages of bad mortgages and sell it to people and misrepresent those things and walk away with all the millions of dollars in fees that they've collected on these things and be totally immune from any customers who claim that they have been defrauded. For me, said Dr. Mandel, he says, the main lesson from this debacle is that both banks and investment banks must be required to fully report what securities they are holding, both directly and indirectly. No more off-the-book special-purpose vehicles. No more hiding derivatives under the table. If a bank or an investment bank is holding a security, they have to publish the amount and the basic characteristics of that security. This requirement may seem onerous to Wall Street, and it is. Everything should be fully reported. Without this simple step towards transparency, nothing else matters. With transparency, other market participants have the chance to make their own judgments. And frankly, these increased regulations do not require that kind of transparency, and that's the objection. Well, the second view is more humorous but tragically true. Charles U. Smith takes a Screwtape Letters approach, and I couldn't resist laughing, though what he writes is painfully true. Here's his letter from the devil to Dr. Paulson. From the office of Satan, prince of lies and proud of it, dear Hank Paulson, you have outdone yourself once again, my loyal servant, with these fraudulent, deliciously deceptive proposals to reform the utterly corrupt financial system you so exploited as the profitable head of Goldman Sachs. My plans for the destruction of the United States of America have been going along rather swimmingly until you rushed things a bit with Bear Stearns. Ah, the wondrous power of pure, unmitigated greed. It remains my favorite tool, and calls for reform were suddenly everywhere, and the rules which would have undone us were simple indeed, as you knew all too well. I'm reading from Charles U. Smith's Screwtape letter version of a simulated letter from Satan congratulating Hank Paulson on his system. So he lifts here for us to read the positive things that would undo this evil system of risk and greed with much deception involved. One, a complete transparency of risk and leverage of all financial documents. Two, marking to market all financial instruments and assets at the close of the trading day, as is currently done in commodities, future, and stocks. What he's talking about there is that you get a market price for everything, and that's where your valuation lies, instead of these pie-in-the-sky valuations which allow fraud to occur. Number three, the banning of off-balance sheet accounting. That means off the books, and they do this all the time within Wall Street to hide things. Four, the banning of offshore accounts and holding companies. And five, the uniform enforcement of these regulations across all financial classes, firms, assets, brokers, and banks, no exceptions. Then he goes on, he says, as you know, Hank, this is the devil talking, transparency, market-to-market, and strictly enforced regulations of all banks, broker deals, and financial institutions would deal a death blow to my plans to destroy the U.S. via destruction of its financial system. Having sold your soul to me for the glory and riches you received at Goldman Sachs, you had to comply with my orders to destroy any such useful regulations with cunning fixes of your own. Though I counted on your native feral instincts, I did not expect a plan of such evil genius. Imagine how foolish and naive humans must be to accept your fix. My mind boggles at the ease with which we have conned the gullible gallery of idiots in Congress and the mainstream media. And I would add, as an afterthought, they're willingly going along with this by not asking proper questions. Satan continues to Hank Paulson. One, you diminish the powers of the Federal Reserve in favor of the shadow government Federal Reserve, which is not even a government agency but a private institution. Two, instead of proposing transparency, you add another layer of secrecy in what the Fed can investigate and do to fix future problems. Number three, you enable more self-regulation. He says, I can't stop laughing at this one. You really are a comedian. Satan continuing to Hank Paulson. I am still amused that the American populace hasn't noticed that you, the master of the dark arts at Goldman Sachs, has been duly appointed as the wolf assigned to guard the sheep. Now you have suggested opening the rusty wire fencing and lighting the opening so your brethren can more easily slip in and slaughter as many sheep as they wish, and the American sheep sit there mesmerized by my other crowning achievement, the TV, blithely accepting that the most voracious, cleverest wolf of all is now their guardian. Never in my wildest imaginations did I hope for such gross stupidity, ignorance, and naivete. Keep up the fine work, Hank. Your lord and master, Lucifer. Well, that was a tongue-in-cheek piece by very good author Charles U. Smith, taking a Screwtape Letters approach, which was C.S. Lewis's fine work simulating the discussions of the devil with his minion on earth named Screwtape on how he deals with men and fools them into doing his will. We're dealing with, in my opinion, a financial conspiracy here to control assets and to create money so that government can have power without taxing people. This is very important to avoid taxation, because that would engender resistance to the billions of dollars in foreign aid going out to these wars of intervention. If every man, woman, and child in America had to pay this $5,000 to $6,000 a year for these wars, they would stop immediately, or there would be a demand to stop because the public would not stand for it. But by deficit spending and by fiat money, they can continue these policies without passing along the pain to individual people, which allows them to continue these things without resistance from the people. They also deal in denying crucial public information to not only public but even Congress. The Bush administration wants to use both the deteriorating situation in Iraq to justify a continued U.S. presence, while simultaneously denying the public the information that would indicate this is a lost cause and it can't be won by staying. Spencer Ackerman complains that, quote, for weeks, analysts within the 16-agency U.S. intelligence community have been toiling to complete an assessment of the situation in Iraq. This morning, it finally went to the Hill. The Senate and House Intelligence Committees and the leadership in both chambers are proud owners of an update to the August National Intelligence Estimate. Now, that was the estimate which downplayed the threat of Iran and gave the Bush administration the ability to temporarily put on hold their plans to attack Iran, giving them an excuse to do so, claiming that Iran, in fact, had stopped their nuclear program. This was as false as the as could be, but nevertheless, it allowed them to cease the plans for attack. As I pointed out in my World Affairs brief before, they did this because Ron Paul and other anti-war candidates were very much a threat in this Republican Democratic primary season, and they wanted to defuse the anti-war threat. That's the same thing why they began to proclaim success in a surge, which actually was caused by buying off opposition forces to the tune of millions of dollars, guaranteeing that they would not attack American troops and they would cease the violence. They bought these people off, and that's the reason the surge appeared to be a success. But as Ackerman continues, he says, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee received a briefing on this new intelligence estimate, but you'll never see it. According to an administration official with knowledge of this process, he said this morning's intelligence document isn't an NIE itself. It's not a formal report. It's more or less an assessment memo. And this August report covered political and security developments in Iraq. But basically he said this report is going to remain secret and it's not allowed to go before the public. As Abraham laments, when a democracy goes to war, you don't want an informed citizenry or anything like it. So what's really happening in Iraq that this report talks about and that you're not allowed to see? Well, from my own independent analysis, I'll give you the following. Despite U.S. government and media efforts to put a successful spin on the sudden rise and fall of violence in Iraq, there's much more to be told. The latest attempt by the al-Maliki government to wrest control of the oil-rich south, the Basra province, from the Mehdi army was soundly rebuffed. IPS News had the best report on what was going on. They said, despite the huge media campaign led by U.S. officials and complicit corporate-controlled media to convince the world U.S. success in Iraq, emerging facts on the ground show a massive failure of this attack on the Mehdi army forces in Basra. The date, March 25th this year, will be remembered as a day of truth through 5 years of occupation. Mehdi army militias controlled all Shia and mixed parts of Baghdad in no time once the violence had begun, a Baghdad police colonel said. Iraqi army and police forces, as well as Badr and Dawa militias, suddenly disappeared from the streets. See, the Iraqi army was using Badr and Dawa militias to do their bidding, and they, in essence, left their armored vehicles in the streets for Mehdi militiamen to drive around in joyous convoys that toured many parts of Baghdad before taking them to stronghold parts of Sadr City in the east of Baghdad. In other words, the Iraqi armed forces with the other militias could not stand up to any significant resistance and melted away, leaving their weapons behind. Now, of course, the police colonel was speaking of the recent clashes between members of the Shia Muqtada al-Sadr's Mehdi army, the largest militia in the country, and members of the Iraqi government forces, which are widely known to comprise members of rival Shia militia, the Badr organization, and the Dawa militias. Dozens of militiamen from both sides were killed in clashes that broke out in Baghdad, Basra, Kut, Samawa, and Hila. And most of the Iraqi Shia southern provinces between the Mehdi army and other militias supported by the U.S. and the Iraqi governments. The Badr organization is headed up by Abdul Aziz al-Hakim, who's also the head of the Supreme Islamic Iraqi Council, which dominates in the government. And the Dawa militia is headed by through his subordinates, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, who's a member of the Dawa party. So the number of civilians killed and injured in the clashes is still unknown. But the Iraqi government continues to be completely silent about the results of these events, other than the fact that a ceasefire was called by Muqtada al-Sadr. Now, for months there had been a struggle in the south between the Sadr movement, the Supreme Islami Iraqi Council, aligned with the government, and the Al-Fadila Party for control of the south, and particularly Basra. Where have the British soldiers been all this time? Were supposed to be in charge of security here. Well, they were tucked neatly into their base outside of Basra, and they didn't come out once during this entire place. Obviously, the British government doesn't want any more casualties so that they don't have or facilitate a demand within Britain to withdraw people or their people completely. They have effectively withdrawn to their military base, as was shown in this conflict. But essentially, they believe that, or al-Sadr peoples believe that al-Maliki was targeting his political opponents prior to October's next election. They say they were targeting outlaw gangs, but why did they start in the areas where Sadr's movement are located? This is a political battle for the political interest of al-Maliki's Dawa party. This is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stan, and we'll be back after the break.
I'm saving $66,000 in interest.
These people didn't refinance. They didn't get a raise. In fact, most didn't change their budget or lifestyle at all. Instead, they made a simple switch in how they bank, which revolutionized their ability to pay off debt. Stop paying bills month after month and never getting ahead. For more information, call 1-800-760-8091. Call 1-800-760-8091 today.
Stop living with pain. Discover Magneticare cell-activating liquid complex and RX magnets for a healthier life. Tom Martino and the Broncos know what works when you need to reduce swelling and inflammation, eliminate chronic pain, increase blood circulation, and aid in the healing process. Get your fast-acting Magneticare liquid complex, cream, or RX magnets now. Call Bob at 303-388-1227. That's 303-388-1227. www.magneticare.net.
This is Ann Johnson. For 14 years, I've owned Brightside Natural Health. The prophecies of Revelation are being fulfilled at an amazing rate, and the kingdom of God is at hand. My passion is to follow God's command to heal the sick and share the reality of Jesus Christ. God faithfully shows me effective, life-changing products like Vital PSP. PSP helps the body heal itself the way God intended. God promises to be present in the midst of your storm. Stop the storm and enjoy God's abundant health. Call me at 303-833-2784.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
We're talking today with Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb. Tom, what makes The Green Herb different?
First is our health analysis. I know of no other company that will take the time necessary to suggest an in-depth herbal program especially for you. And we do it at no charge or obligation. Also, we manufacture all of our products right in the Wheat Ridge facility. This way we can assure you that you're getting the highest quality product available. Last is our guarantee. If you don't think our products are the finest, most potent herbal products available, just return the bottle and we'll exchange it or refund your purchase price. We can do the analysis at The Green Herb, over the phone, or online at www.thegreenherb.com. Call today and set an appointment for your free health profile at 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or come by our store on the north side of I-70 Frontage Road, 1 mile west of Kipling.
Good morning. This is Joel Skousen, editor of the World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stan Monteith on the American Radio Network. We're talking about the situation in Iraq here, about the failure of the Iraqi army and the U.S. armed forces to defeat the Mehdi army of Muqtada al-Sadr in Basra and in Sadr City. IPS had an interesting interview with Brigadier General Qatim al-Wan of the Iraqi army. He said this failure takes Iraq to a point zero, and even worse. We must admit that the formation of our forces was wrong, as we saw how our officers deserted their posts, leaving their vehicles for militias to capture. Not a single unit of our army and police stood for their duty in Baghdad, leaving us wondering what to do. Most of the officers who left their posts were members of the Badr Brigades and the Dawa Party, who should have been most faithful to Maliki's government. Now, this is a very crucial point that he's making here, is that there was a complete demoralization of the Iraqi and allied militias, and they were virtually incapable of confronting a well-armed Mehdi army. And they deserted. And this doesn't speak well, of course, and this is what the U.S. government actually wants. Now they have an excuse, every excuse in the world, to stay in power. But this is very discouraging for General Petraeus, even though he isn't admitting it, because all of our efforts at spending billions of dollars at training the Iraqi army have led to nothing. The Green Zone, of course, in Baghdad, where the U.S. Embassy and Iraqi government and parliament buildings are located, was hit by missiles this week. General Petraeus, of course, painted this as a reason to attack Iran, accusing Iran of being behind the shelling of the zone. There's no evidence for that. At least one U.S. citizen was killed in the attacks, and two others were injured. The Green Zone looks deserted by most U.S. and Iraqi personnel because they've been ordered to take shelter deep underground. So the big question is, why did al-Sadr suddenly come down, stand down his militia and agree to a ceasefire when he was winning? McClatchy News says the Bush administration was caught off guard by the first Iraqi-led military offensive since the fall of Saddam Hussein, a week-long thrust into southern Iraq whose paltry results of silence talk at the Pentagon of further troop withdrawals. As I say, this is the important thing, is that this defeat has given the U.S. every excuse to stay. President Bush, of course, always in denial, declared a defensive, which ended a defining moment in Iraq history, but it was defining in a negative sense. Obviously, the Iraq army failed to stand up to even the most token resistance. In any case, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has been weakened, and the de facto ceasefire brokered by had to be brokered by an Iranian general. There's no empirical evidence that the Iraqi forces can stand up on their own, said a U.S. senior military official in Washington. Well, that's an understatement. The Iraqi army and militias were routed completely, and the brokering of a ceasefire with al-Sadr was the only way out for the U.S. and Iraqi forces to save face. Now, it's interesting that they had to work through the Iranians to convince al-Sadr to stand down. Clearly, there had to be some money, arms, and promises flow to al-Sadr in order to halt this destruction of al-Maliki's pretensions to power. Al-Sadr also demanded the government and U.S. stop its raid against his followers in Baghdad, which they had done, even though there have been a few breaks in the ceasefire it seems to be holding here. But as I said previously, you know, the British military presence was notable by its absence. They kept to their base just outside of Basra. The U.S. is the one who came in with airstrikes against the Mehdi army positions, killing more civilians than fighters, as usual. Well, the official story on this negotiation went on between al-Sadr and the Iraqis is that two Iraqi parliament members traveled to Iran on behalf of al-Maliki to ask religious authorities there to intervene with al-Sadr. I'm sure that there had to be a tacit understanding by the Iranians that now al-Maliki owes them one. However, as IPS says, fighting continues in Basra area after the announcement, and U.S. airstrikes killed 23 suspected militants. Of course, they always include any civilian casualties as suspected militants. It's very interesting how the U.S. has attempted to have been very embarrassed by this failure and its inability to salvage this operation, have kind of distanced itself from the Iraqi government. They actually made this look like this operation, which was called Operation Night's Assault in Basra, was essentially launched without consulting Washington. This is absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't get an American code name if it was launched without consulting with Washington. I'm sure the Iraqis are going to search through the dictionaries and come up with an Operation Knights Assault in English as the name of an operation without Americans being involved. The effort, of course, to disclaim U.S. responsibility for the operation is an indication that it was viewed as a major embarrassment to General Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker. They're about to testify before Congress this week. Behind this furious backpedaling is a major Bush administration miscalculation about Muqtada al-Sadr and the Mehdi Army, which the administration was telling everyone was no longer capable of a coordinated military operation. Now, there may be a tactical reason for the ceasefire as well, but it certainly is not, the ceasefire is not the long-term reason. Al-Maliki has clearly been weakened by this failure, and al-Sadr is now the major force to be reckoned with in Iraq. And by the time the ceasefire was called, al-Maliki had been bloodied after days of ineffective fighting and welcomed away back from the precipice. Both Iran, which brokered the agreement, and al-Sadr, whose forces acquitted themselves well against the government, have been strengthened throughout this. And this brings into question, again, whether the al-Maliki regime is even viable in the next election because of this. Now, this was really done, of course, for political reasons. As I said, the provincial elections in Basra were coming up October 1st, and al-Maliki probably desired to improve the government's position in advance of the elections. The point is that the south around Basra is the major oil-producing region, and everybody wants to get control of this because there's a great deal of smuggling going on now from both sides. They're paying off their allies with oil shipments, and the U.S. and Iraq has had trouble getting control of the Basra region. And so this was an attempt to rout out the Mehdi army so that the allies of al-Maliki could take over Basra and provide a unified front before they sign on the dotted line about these oil deals, which will give concessions to foreign companies. So there's much that will continue to go on in Iraq, and I'm sure that we'll see the U.S. put a positive spin on this as much as they can in next week's hearings before Congress. Also in Congress this year, we talked about they're talking about a compromise on the warrantless spying and telecom immunity bill. In the face of public and congressional resistance to granting immunity to telecoms for helping the NSA spy on Americans without a warrant, the president suddenly claims that he's ready to compromise in order to get this bill passed. Sure, just like the anti-torture bill, whose final version gave him the power to torture at will if the president feels it was necessary, quote, in the interest of national security. Now, I should have said used enhanced interrogation techniques. This is the euphemism which everyone in the news spouts every single week because it's off limits to call this torture. This is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief. I'm standing in for Dr. Stanley Monteith, and we'll come back to you right after this break.
Tapes of the preceding show are available by calling 1-800-205-6245, the American Freedom Network.
Are you treating just your symptoms with dangerous medications and a multitude of supplements? If you answered yes, then you may be fighting the battle but losing the war. Nourish each cell in your body with BioSuperfood and win the war. 30 years of research, BioSuperfood offers more than 5,000 nutrients, proteins, vitamins, minerals, enzymes, EFAs, and powerful antioxidants to boost your immune system. With BioSuperfood, the war is won at the cellular level. Call today toll-free 877-288-9116.
If you enjoy alternative stations on the radio, shouldn't your TV service provide the same choices? You can get more channels than you have now, plus many more Christian and family programs in crystal clear 100% digital picture and sound, and the price is significantly lower than cable. Just call Rocky Mountain Satellite at 970-443-7375. Already enjoying satellite TV but want a lower price? We can help you too. Packages start at only $19.99 a month. Call 970-443-7375. DVRs and high definition also available.
More than 31 million Americans have some type of hearing problem. Only 1 in 5 will seek help. Do you frequently misunderstand conversations? Do you often ask people to repeat what they're saying? Do your ears ring? If you're the one who's always turning up the volume on the TV or the radio, maybe it's time to get a hearing evaluation by a professional, certified, caring audiologist. Call Michelle at the Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688. That's the Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
And this is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stanley Monteith on the American Freedom Network. We're talking about the latest compromises the president is proposing to get this warrantless spying and immunity for telecoms bill passed in the Senate. There's a great deal of opposition from the Democrats and from many citizens around the country against giving these telecoms immunity for blatantly breaking the law. The president and his allies in Congress will no doubt try to change the language a little bit so that they can deny that there's any immunity being given. But, of course, as in the anti-torture bill, there'll be fine print that will find some way legally to grant telecoms effective immunity anyway. Rest assured, one thing that won't stop is the warrantless spying will not stop. It never has stopped. It's been going on even before this bill, even before the NSA increase in spying within the telecoms. The telecoms have always, since World War II, been involved in spying on the American people, and they never ask for warrants when the FBI comes into their offices to tap wires. Now, it is interesting to note how the spineless Democrats are finally forced to admit their opposition to the most egregious aspects of spying was only a token one. The Democratic leadership clearly has no intention of impeaching the president over this most serious breach of the Constitution. This only came to light as Director of Intelligence Mike McConnell told an audience at Furman University that the Democratic critics of his bill said we shouldn't have an intelligence community. Some have to have that point of view. He said some say the president of the United States violated the process, spied on Americans, and should be impeached and go to jail. Unquote. McConnell said this to bait the Democrats into coming out on the record and denying that there was any such intention to impeach, which Nancy Pelosi did. And Senator Feingold wrote to McConnell demanding that he ought to either back up his statement or issue an immediate correction and apology. Senator Feingold concluded that, you correctly noted that the bill was a subject of vigorous debate. However, she says, I'm not aware of any senator saying or suggesting that we shouldn't have an intelligence community or that President Bush should be impeached and go to jail. Well, that's sad, but no intention to impeach on an issue of such grave importance is nothing to brag about for the Democrats. Bush should be impeached, but if the opposition won't touch it, it won't ever happen. The U amendment is enough to put away several people in the Bush administration for high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, this is the memorandum that has made big news within the news this week. It's a memorandum by John Yoo of the Justice Department, especially claiming that the commander-in-chief can authorize, as Marty Letterman said tongue-in-cheek, can authorize pouring acid on a detainee, can authorize cutting out his tongue, poking out an eye, simulated drowning, notwithstanding a statute that would prohibit that very conduct. It's a typical display of Mr. Yu's dubious talents for giving an outward appearance of legal reasoning to radical political diatribes. Well, it's very interesting that this memo indicates that the 84 pages of trying to justify, essentially, that nothing in the law can prescribe if there's a war on terror going on, that they can essentially, the government can do anything they want to other people. This, of course, begs the question of why we even signed the Geneva Convention if there's no legal basis for compliance. And if we don't have to comply, why should any of our enemies comply? I can see Russia and China gleefully reading this memo and preparing a similar response relative to justifying or denying claims that they tortured Americans in the past, which they clearly have. Well, what Lederman and others also pointed out is that John Yoo and the Justice Department had no authority to issue this memo, nor did the Pentagon have the authority to act on it without the consent of the Attorney General. Now, while it does not appear as if Yoo was acting on his own, good yes-man that he was, there's no indication that anyone else higher up wanted his signature or initials on this memo. What this means is that they verbally relayed their support of the memo down the chain of command and refused to put it in writing, knowing that this was a totally illegal abuse of power. In fact, the Yoo memo is even related to warrantless spying, as USA Today put it. For at least 16 months after September 11th, the Bush administration believed that the Constitution's protection against unreasonable search and seizure on U.S. soil didn't apply to its effort to protect against terrorism. That view was expressed in a secret Justice Department memo. So that's the situation there. I might say that in this week's World Affairs Brief, we cover all of these issues plus much more. And if any of your, if our listeners would like a free sample copy of the World Affairs Brief, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com, and I'll be happy to send them a free issue so that they can read this and perhaps subscribe to the World Affairs Brief. People can go to worldaffairsbrief.com for a synopsis of the current brief, as well as an update on all the top stories that come out each day in the news. One of the most interesting stories that's coming out is Zimbabwe. It's on the brink of, it has been on the brink of destruction economically. The economy's been a third of what it was during colonial days due to Marxist dictator Robert Mugabe. But it's very interesting that even though in this week's election he was soundly defeated, he controls the Electoral Commission, and they have essentially manipulated the results as best they could to go from a massive defeat into one that's just a bare defeat by a few percentage points, allowing Robert Mugabe to have a runoff for president if he so desires. There is a fairly strong movement within even his own party to get him to step down. They can see that it's not good for the ZANU party, which is a Marxist party, to have Robert Mugabe continue in office. It's also very interesting that there has been a great deal of manipulation of the election, and that this is tied to an Israeli firm which runs many elections within Africa, at least the electronic versions of these elections, and they're being accused of being of helping these governments stay in power by manipulating the elections in their favor. And while the Israeli government and even the South African deny that the Israelis have been manipulated in elections, it's very interesting that this same company in Israel helps the South African government, which is a Marxist government, the ANC, stay in power as well. That brings up the question, why is the Anglo-American establishment are trying to help these people stay in power? Well, you can read about that in the World Affairs Brief. Joel Scouse, editor, standing in for Dr. Monti. Thanks for being with us today.
Radio is your best choice for advertising. Radio gets results. Call 1-800-205-6245 and find out just how inexpensive and effective radio can be. That's 1-800-205-6245. KHNC 1360, The Lion. That's 1-800-205-6245.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
Join the Beth Messiah congregation and celebrate Passover 2008 in Messiah Yeshua. He brought us out to bring us in. Sunday, April the 20th, 6 p.m. at the Ramada Plaza, 10 East 120th Avenue in North Glen. Deadline for reservations is April the 13th. Call 1-800-205-6245 for more information. That's 1-800-205-6245. And hug Sameach.
Editor of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stanley Monteith. Apparently we have another segment here, and so I'll go on to one more subject. You know, I've often written about the ability of the U.S. globalists to take both sides of an issue in order to control the outcome either way. Nothing is more symptomatic of this tactic in action than the supposed former placators of Russia during the Cold War, like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's now posturing himself as an anti-war, anti-Bush administration advisor. Well, neoliberal elite Zbigniew Brzezinski is one of the leading architects of the war on terrorism across the Middle East, and he wrote the book, The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives, and laid the groundwork for 9/11. He's adopted a political expedient wolf in sheep's clothing role, his much-publicized criticism of Bush-Cheney's mismanagement of Iraq, has garnered rave reviews from those who are misguided and ignorant enough to believe that Brzezinski is in any way anti-war. He is not. The key passage in the new Brzezinski piece leaves no illusions that that neoliberal position maintains the existing anti-terrorism pretext for endless war. He says, and I'm quoting from Brzezinski's book, "The end of the occupation will thus be a boon for the war on Al-Qaeda, bringing an end to a misguided adventure that not only precipitated the appearance of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, but also diverted the United States from Afghanistan, where the original Al-Qaeda threat grew and still persists." Of course, unquote, this is still more propaganda, but what he's basically preparing for is that even if we pull out of Iraq, that the neocons will still give us an excuse that we have to keep rampaging through the Middle East, chasing all the mythical Al-Qaeda. What Brzezinski seeks to simply reverse the Bush-Cheney blunder and return to the geostrategic position achieved with the excuse of 9/11, a regional conference he claims should be convened to promote regional stability, border control, and security arrangements, all of which will help mitigate the unavoidable risk connected with disengagement. Well, of course, what he means by regional economic development is a code for oil development on behalf of the foreign oil companies who want to get back into the oil industry in Iraq. Brzezinski is currently the national security advisor to Barack Obama. He would undoubtedly play a major role for Hillary Clinton, who has another team of globalists counseling her, mostly those like Strobe Talbott and Sandy Berger surrounding the original Clinton administration. Also note that Brzezinski was the foreign policy advisor for John McCain's presidential campaign in 2000. Brzezinski, in my opinion, should not be trusted any more than his old friend Henry Kissinger, who surprisingly still lurks behind the McCain campaign. So what I'm basically making the point is the CFR globalists are in fact involved in every major candidate, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain. They were also advising even more conservative candidates such as Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee. Now, Mitt Romney is not a globalist, as I've said, but he's trying hard to gain their approval by having all the same type of advisors, and he would, in fact, do their bidding, though ignorantly. And that's one of the reasons why they don't want him, in the sense that being a non-participant in the globalist conspiracy, he might see too much and turn on them if Mitt Romney were to gain the presidency. That's why I don't believe they'll allow him to be vice president as well. But it is amazing the ease with which these globalist handlers of presidents cross over from the Republicans to the Democrats, though there are enough of them that they tend to form teams, what I call A, B, C, or even D, so that they can hover around however many establishment candidates are necessary running for president. So, folks, the game is rigged politically. This has been Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stan on the American Freedom Network. Good day.